So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it, all about control, and if you can take it, all about your debt, and if you can play it, it's all about pain, and who's gonna make it? I am the game, you don't wanna play me, I am control, no way you can shake me, I am heavy debt, no way you can pay me, I am the pain, and I know you can't take me, look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a Cleveland bitch from a smoking gun, I am the game, and I so move on out, you can die like a fool. Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be. Come on over, struggle, why don't you ask me? Don't you forget there's a price you can pay. Cause I am the game and I want to play.
Politics.com. You can catch all the latest on our show, anything else we've really got going on. Quick update for those of you who've been wondering what's going on at the website. We've had some major investigations going on. We hope to be able to get those out to you in the very near future. They're going to include about three or four different council members. Disturbing information. Hopefully it will lead to some indictments and possibly some politicians going bye-bye, as they should. I'll keep you up to date on it. Meantime, we had some, apparently there was some kind of a problem between me and my IT guy, and for some reason or another, somehow the posting things kind of got disassociated. I don't know how to explain it to you because I'm not an IT guy, but the bottom line is, looks like it's all worked out, so we'll be getting more stories posted very, very quickly and getting back up to speed. All of our radio shows, however, have been posted on the website over the last week and a half, so you can still enjoy the latest downloads and replays of this and send to your friends as well. In the meantime, hello, Mr. Truth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, my friend?
Better now. I've been working on this problem for the last couple of days. We've also had an audio problem for the last couple of days. I believe that turned out to be BTR.
Right.
So we've got that worked out. And, you know, just the usual stuff. I mean, you know,
kind of choppy right now. Hopefully you hear me okay.
I'm hearing you fine, actually. I don't know why I'm choppy.
A little choppy. It's not bad, but hopefully it'll improve.
Well, we'll see what happens. That's kind of been the problem the last couple of nights. So I guess we'll see what happens. I don't know. So
I didn't get here the last couple of nights. I wasn't sure.
I understand. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best.
All right.
In the meantime, you know, we've got all kinds of things, as usual, going on. We're going to get to some of the bigger things here in just a few minutes. But I found a couple of interesting stories that just shocked me. And it really doesn't. For the whole world who don't know, I am not what you would call a preservationist. If you own property, welcome to the free world. Do what you want to with it. God bless America.
Yep.
However, I am not a fan of hypocrisy and picking and choosing who to hold accountable to the rules. And there's a reason I bring this up, Dale, because this week, I remember Johnny's out in Hikes Point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Johnny's historic building, it was built in 1851, ties back to 1851, folks, was demolished. This building had no significant structural problems or anything else. The restaurant closed last year because they flat out didn't have enough business. After a couple of decades there, Johnny's just did not have enough business to stay in business. So they closed the restaurant, and miraculously, a building that dates all the way back to as early as 1851 got demolished with no preservationist outcry whatsoever.
Mm.
Now, the reason this is a story to me is if you remember Frank Ferris, Jenny's Diner.
Jenny's Diner.
That's the situation. And what he had to go through, and he ultimately ended up losing the restaurant, got in some legal trouble and everything else. He tried to burn his own house down. They didn't like that at all. But you always put through the ringer. And then Colonial Gardens, which is a trap. I mean, it's nothing but a fire trap and a hindrance. It's probably going to fall on its own. But you had the promoters out there screaming, save it, save it, save it. So now the city of Louisville paid money to buy Colonial Gardens. They're trying to find a developer to develop it and keep the historic preservation of it. How can that be? How can these two places be, one chastised in the situation with Frank Ferris, the other one saved in the situation with Colonial Gardens? Neither one of them, as far as I'm concerned, have as much of a history as Johnny's. That location does. Around 1851. Somebody explain to me, I don't understand how they can sit here and justify tearing that place down and there is no outcry from the so-called preservationist.
Well, when a city buys it like that and they make that decision, didn't the Metro Council have to vote for this?
The Colonial Gardens, yes.
So, that would be my question. Ask some of these Metro Councilmen once again, follow the votes. What is their reasoning for doing it? Why do they want to waste our tax dollars to buy, as you said, something that's going to fall down on its own?
It pretty much is. I mean, I'm not sure it's going to fall down, but, I mean, there are all kinds of structural problems with Colonial Gardens. The floors are falling. The foundation isn't exactly straight. I mean, there's all kinds of structural problems. But this place, if you're going to let a place get demolished, they should have let it demolished. It's not serving any purpose where it's at. It's not like it's in a major prime area where everybody's just scrambling to get to this one little parking lot that has an old bar and restaurant in it. I don't get that when you take a historic building like this, like the George Hikes Jr. House, that's been around between 160 to 200 years, and allow that to be just torn down, dumped off, salvaged, whatever, and then it's disappeared. There was nothing wrong with it. I'm upset with the preservationists. While I claim not to be a preservationist, and in fact I'm not, I do believe in being equitable and fair and at least honest in what you're trying to portray. These guys went crazy trying to save Colonial Gardens. They went nuts on Ferris, and nobody showed up for this. To me,
well,
it was an insult
to
the preservation movement. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I don't get too caught up on the preservation and stuff. It's one of those things, how the people want it so bad, let them spend their own private money and buy it. So when the taxpayers are forced, because it is coercion, try not paying your taxes and what they'll do to you. So you are forced to pay for the government to go buy these kind of things. My question would be, why does the government need to buy it? If there were any owners or any buyers out there, any bites that they had on someone wanting to buy it and do the same thing with it, then I'd say let a private sector group do it. But why does the government need to step in and do it?
Because the preservationists are the bleeding heart, tree-hugging liberals that the daggone Democrats in this town rely on.
Yep.
For those of you who are wondering about this, I thought an excellent opinion piece, and he put it in the Colonel of the former Johnny's, the George W. Hikes Jr. House. And I posted that in the link chat room so you guys can get a look at that and see what you think about it. Tonight we're kind of going to focus as much as we can on national issues. Why? We've got the Syria thing going on. Afghanistan is out there. The president, what the hell he's doing at all. You've got John McCain, everybody's favorite liberal Democrat with an R behind his name. You've got gun bans going on. I mean, everything is going nuts. So I kind of want to stay as much as we can on NASA tonight, but I wanted to put that story out there. In other news, according to the NCPA.org, the International Security Assist Force, or the ISAF, that's in Afghanistan, is getting ready to pull out. They're going to go in Afghanistan. However, you know, it's really interesting because in Afghanistan, things are still the same. Things are still the same, and I'm trying to figure that one out as well. Because according to all the information, you know, Afghanistan, they say, is better than they were in 2001. But the proof really isn't there. However, everybody continues to fight over why we went into Afghanistan in the first place. And quite honestly, folks, I can only tell you this. We went there for the money. And when I say money, I mean serious money. You know, according to U.S. estimates, here you go, folks, this is why we're there. According to U.S. estimates, Afghanistan's mineral deposits are worth over $1 trillion. The Pentagon actually called Afghanistan the Saudi Arabia of lithium. Why is lithium important to us, Dale?
Well, I think lithium is very important for everybody, and we've got to get it from them if we're not going to be able to develop it ourselves in our country.
Everybody's into the battery. Yeah, I'm here. Everybody, you know, we've got the lithium-ion batteries, all the cell phones, all the other crap. Everything is going to be lithium this and lithium that. So yeah, we're just going ahead and getting ourselves in the middle of a war so we can get control of it. That's what went on in Afghanistan. You know, why does all of this matter? Because of Syria. Because of Syria. A disturbing report came out last week. As everybody knows by now, late last week, the Obama administration actually announced two new gun control measures. This was last Thursday. You know, and they're trying to basically stop the import of military surplus weapons. So collectors and everybody else, gun collectors and stuff, are all in an uproar and everybody's angry. You know, of course, this is just another way to try to get control of whatever guns they can get control of. But what is really interesting to me with this story is, you know, the government sells arms to everybody. Syrian rebels, check. We're going to get into that one in a minute. We sell these arms to all the rebels around the world and everything else. And once our little things are done, you know, a lot of collectors back in the U.S. buy these weapons for collector purposes. And now the USA is saying, oh, wait, we can't have this because guess what? It's going to add to violence and criminal acts and crime. It's fascinating. Because, you know, the U.S. has approved 250,000 of these guns to be imported since 2005 alone. But now a new policy that Barack Obama put through, only museums and the government will be allowed to pay to import these weapons here. Now, here's the thing, because they say this is going to stop crime, Bill. Somebody explain to me how this is going to stop crime, or even gun registration and everything else they want to do is going to stop crime. Do you have any idea? Because I sure don't.
It's not going to stop any crime. I mean, the bottom line is you go back and the White House announced, like you said, that they were going to ban all these re-imports of military surplus, and it would effectively shut down a 110-year-old civilian marksmanship program. I mean, there was a fact sheet put out on whitehouse.gov that kept referencing this order that it was going to keep military-grade firearms off our streets. But it's not going to keep anything off the streets. I mean, we see the truth came out in Al-Qaeda, how that all was tied together with the arms and Al-Qaeda. And the bottom line is this program was administered by the U.S. Army from 1916 all the way up to 1996, and there's no data indicating any of the weapons involved in homicide or imported surplus rifles, so it's not going to help crime at all.
Well, it's not going to do one damn thing about it. A criminal doesn't care where the weapon comes from. If they want a weapon, they're going to get it. And I find it fascinating because this comes on the heels of a Harvard study. You go to Breitbart.com, and yeah, I know a lot of people don't like the source, but I really don't care. When the facts are there, the facts are there, regardless of the source. But Breitbart had a Harvard study, and a study titled, "Would Banning Firearms Reduce Murder and Suicide?" And what it does, it looks at intentional deaths throughout continental Europe. It juxtaposes them with the U.S. and tries to show the disparity between gun control and lower death rate. And what they have found is that, you know, those with more gun control tend to have higher death rates. Like, we didn't know this already. But I'll give you an example of those rates around the world. In Russia, the rate of gun ownership is about 4,000 people per 100,000 inhabitants. So that's not very high. The murder rate was 20.5 people per 100,000. This is back in 2002, and it's gotten worse since. In Finland, the rate of gun ownership is 39,000 per 100,000 people, and yet the murder rate was less than 2 people per 100,000. You see where I'm going with this. You know, almost people in Finland have guns, and less than 2 people per 100,000 are killed with them. All right? Only 4% of the people in Russia have guns, and over 21 people, or right at 21 people per 100,000 are killed with them. You know, if you look at Norway, Norway has Western Europe's highest household gun ownership rate. They also have the lowest murder rate. But we're looking at all of this, and the U.S. is constantly being called the most violent nation in the world because of gun control. People like me who want to keep my gun, I'm not into gun control. But yet the U.S. comes in seventh. Even with all the gun control crap we have, we're seventh behind Russia, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarus, and the Ukraine in murders. That is alarming. The murder rate in Russia is 30.6. The rate in the USA is 7.8 on average. Now, you tell me where the problem is. Is it the weapons that were re-imported?
Well, the guns have never been the culprits, the persons using the guns. And we saw what went on with Pierce Morgan when they tried to have a huge media spun thing about how we got to get all the guns off the streets because of the school shootings. And we saw that, thankfully, that backfired on them, no pun intended. And now people are getting more guns. Well, the government's buying up the ammunition. So it's kind of a race who can buy up the ammunition. Well, the government's using your money to buy the ammunition. So they're going to win that race. But they don't want you to have the weapons. And it's a whole societal thing. They want to tell you how the guns are bad. But like you just said, you can go to countries like Finland and Norway where they'll just be out there riding their bicycles around with a gun strapped across their back. It's not a big deal. But here, if you go into a hardware store these days and you're open carrying in an open carry state, somebody's going to call the police because they're scared and they don't know anything about the law.
And this is where it gets interesting, because in a private meeting at the White House on Monday, and there's a reason I brought you guys down this road. In a private meeting at the White House on Monday, Senator John McCain, Lindsey Graham met with Barack Obama and made a deal. They made a deal. The deal was that Obama will give Syrian rebels more advanced weapons. In return, McCain, Graham would support a bombing mission in Syria. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and this is all based on the same damn lie. McCain said that since he's willing to upgrade, since Obama's willing to upgrade the capabilities to the Free Syrian Army, then he's changed his thoughts and actions, and there we go. So this is going to be great for us, right? Except for one small thing. Go ahead.
Right. No, I was going to say there are several, I want you to finish, but there are several reasons that we're really going to war in Syria, but go ahead and I'll touch on that in a moment.
Well, I mean, what I was going to tell you is, I mean, for me, there are a lot of reasons for going to war in Syria, and I'm going to let you get into that. But I want to explain to everybody something. This whole war in Syria, this whole bombing thing in Syria, is based on the government lie that Al-Assad, the president of Syria, the acting president, whoever, they had a military coup. Al-Assad is being accused of using chemical weapons on his own people. However, we have legitimate reports from legitimate journalists. AP journalist Dale Gavlak, all right, has already given us a report that Syria and Damascus admitted to him that they were responsible for the chemical incident that Bashar al-Assad is being accused of. They said they screwed up, that the rebels created an accident because they mishandled the chemical weapons that were given to them by Saudi Arabia. Now, this is yet another example of war based on a lie by our government. Can anybody explain to me why we should continue to trust this government?
No, there's no good reason to trust them. No, there's no good reason to trust them. What I was going to say is, you said you want to get into the Syria situation. There are several several reasons that the United States government, not to be confused with we, the people, since we're not the government, and I keep trying to tell people that listen, but there's several reasons the U.S. government wants to go to war in Syria, and the biggest one is they look at this, it helps fulfill a long-range plan to destabilize Syria that's going to cause it to partition into warring and chaotic ethnic factions, and this is by design. And then people think that's a little too conspiratory for them. Then what about the fact that it's also going to stop the construction of a natural gas pipeline across Syria, which would in turn boost Iran's economy, because then it would send Iranian gas back and forth to Europe. So they don't want Iran's economy getting up there. They don't have the balls to attack Iran. But this is kind of a sidebar, because they figure, hell, even though the people are against this, 498-2, one congressman said, reports are coming in. They want to basically stop the construction of a natural gas pipeline. They want to destabilize Syria. And more than anything, they want to send a message to the Middle East that the United States government is still all-powerful. And they're doing this, all said, to try to prop up the very weak dollar, which they're trying to keep that to be remaining the reserve currency in all oil transactions.
And there you go. Because that is the bottom line. This has absolutely nothing to do with the chemical weapons. We're going to make up another lie. Remember, remember, Benghazi was all over a false lie over a YouTube video. Okay? I mean, everything we're always told about going to war in this country or going to bomb anybody has been perpetuated based on lies from our own government. Now we're going to go into Syria based on yet another lie that has been verified, if you want to believe the AP as your source. In this particular case, it's one of the first times I've seen the AP give a legitimate story that discounted what the administration was saying. But the rebels have admitted to be the ones who blew up the chemical weapons that Assad is getting blamed for. Now, I'm sorry. With that in mind, how can we sit here and justify this? And John McCain goes out and says, well, since Barack Obama is going to give the rebels more weapons, better weapons, and for the record, folks, these same Syrian rebels are Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is bad. They're the ones that took down the Twin Towers. We had to lie to go into Iraq on the pretense that we were going to get Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden, bad. Al-Qaeda, bad. They took down Twin Towers. We can't do anything with these people. And we're arming the son of a bucks in Syria. Dale, where's the hypocrisy?
Well, the hypocrisy's all over the place. Like you said, they're finally having to admit that that's who you're arming here is Al-Qaeda. We've been saying it for a long time that that's who they're arming. Hell, the CIA helps form Al-Qaeda, so of course they're going to help prop them up. But now it's more in the open. And again, if you want to be, I guess, you want to go back to just being cynical like I am, more than anything, they got to feed the military-industrial complex. It demands wars.
Well, there you go. There you go. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to work on my sound volume. From what I understand, I may be cutting out a little bit. We're going to take a quick break. It's the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. You listen to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Mm-hmm.
to the we've got the sound situation taken care of. I apologize, you guys. I have no idea. I switched the setup tonight, thinking that would take care of the sound problem we had the last couple of days. Apparently, it did not on my end. From what I understand, Dale has sounded just fine. So apparently, it's on my end alone, and figure it out. Dale, we are back, man. And I tell you, yep. we mentioned Iran and everything else in this whole Syrian deal. And really, truthfully, at the end of the day, do you honestly think that this is just where we're basically using Syria as a pawn to send a message to Iran?
Oh, I definitely think they are. And again, if we get back to that connection with the oil transactions, like I said, they want to send that message throughout the Middle East that the U.S. is still all powerful. And another issue that people probably haven't caught on to is this is going to aid the long-term goal of globalism, because it puts the entire Middle East into unresolvable, debt and suffering. And then here we come in. Guess who's going to bail them out if they have unresolvable debt and suffering? The banksters. So then the elite banksters can come in and finance it and offer to rebuild the entire region at a certain interest rate, of course.
Well, see, I mean, that's the whole thing, because we're paying for all these wars. I mean, we try to lie and use the UN. We're just doing what the UN is wanting us to do. We went into Iraq and all these other little things we've been doing. This time, the UN is not going to back us. So, but we paid for all of the wars supposedly on behalf of the UN. We didn't get reimbursed for that. Not to mention all the money, like in Iraq, we're still spending money helping rebuild Iraq. We're leaving Afghanistan in ruins just so that we can, now that we've showed our dominance there, when we want the lithium, we're going to go get it. It really, truly, at the end of the day, comes down to corporatism, does it not? This is not anything to do with a direct threat to the United States. Syria can't threaten the U.S. They have nothing to threaten us with. So how many do we continue getting ourselves in this situation?
No, there's definitely no threat to the U.S. And again, you distract Americans from a number of scandals when you start a war. You can all of a sudden cover up and get the media off the front page with Benghazi and Fast and Furious, and we got the IRS nonprofit division crimes, we got the NSA spying, we got the continued failed wars in Afghanistan, we got a domestic economy that's tanking. So, you get a big war going and it gives the people an adrenaline rush. They can say, yeah, we're gonna go to war for America, and it makes them forget about everything the government's doing to us at home.
Well, I agree with you there, and that's always a disturbing thing to me. And we're getting some comments in the chat room. Our good friend at Roundup basically said Obama hasn't approved it yet, and I'm assuming he's talking about the bombing of Syria. But, it doesn't matter. He doesn't have to approve it yet. Obama has already put his foot in his mouth, said we were going to do it, sent everything over there to make sure it happens, and then he backtracked when he started getting backlash because the American people stepped up and said, oh, no, you can't do this without congressional approval. So Obama decided he's going to go ahead and ask the Congress to do it so that he can protect himself from the backlash and say, well, Congress approved this. If you need proof of that, the Senate committee passed it today on a vote of 10-7, passed a resolution authorizing this bombing and stuff in Syria. And what's really disturbing here is Senator Rand Paul saw an amendment that was going to, make them declare war or do something, using the 1973 War Powers Act. They refused to do that. His amendment was voted down quite handily, as usual, because nobody wants to listen to somebody speaking the truth, and there you go, Dale, the truth again. But John McCain decided he was going to go ahead and put an amendment out there and made it clear. His amendment basically made it very clear that any negotiated settlement that would end the conflict has to lead to a democratic government in Syria. Now, what the flip side of that is in plain English, Rand Paul says we're not going into Syria to be a nation builder. John McCain's amendment just said we were. Am I reading that wrong, Dale?
No, I if I'm understanding correctly, Rand Paul is basically saying he's speaking for us since no one else will. He's saying that we shouldn't be going in there and doing that. We know McCain's going to weasel around and word it whatever way we need to word it, because he likes a good war. I mean, he's an old Cold Warrior. He likes a good war. I mean, this guy, it's in his blood. He's got blood in those oil streams.
And you're absolutely right. And in the meantime, what's being ignored here? We're spending all this time talking about bombing Syria.
Oh, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, the IRS.
Thank you.
NSA, the DEA, Afghanistan, the domestic economy.
See, I love asking you the question because you're right on the tip of your fingers, man. That's exactly it. Because there's two major things really going on right now. One is the budget. The Republicans put their foot in the mouth. We've got this whole so-called sequester thing going on. For one thing, folks, if we're in a sequester, we have no money. How in the hell are we sending all this stuff to Syria to bomb them at $1 million for a tomahawk? But, hey, that's just me, right? So, you know, we're getting into all of this budget talk. The budget has to be voted on and taken care of this month. So this just gives both sides, again, the Uniparty, they get the opportunity to just go ahead and raise the federal debt limit again, forget about worrying about the budget, kick the can down the road one more time, because we have a war to take care of. That's more important. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're right, because they love the good war, as we said. It goes without saying, we were kind of repeating ourselves. Now, somebody in the chat room asked about the old the good old pipeline. Everybody remembers way back when, the Keystone Pipeline.
Oh, the XL. Yeah, the XL pipeline, yeah.
Yeah, and the Keystone XL, it's kind of crunch time for the Keystone XL. I was reading an article from The Hill last month, and supposedly both sides, I guess that would be both sides of the Uniparty there, both sides say that a decision by Obama would come by the end of this year, which just tells me the next few months are going to be full of lobbying and efforts back and forth. But the people who don't like that Keystone Pipeline want to have all these demonstrations and events across the country to rally all the environmental pressure on Obama to reject the Alberta to the Gulf Coast pipeline. But supposedly it's going to come to our head, they say, by the end of this year.
And we'll just wait for those pigs to fly, right?
Right.
Exactly. You know, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. And this is exactly why McCain met with Obama privately on Monday, told Obama he delivered a vote, but he wanted something in return, and he just got it. So now we're going to have another 10 or 15 years of nation building that we don't need, aren't prepared for, and isn't our place to do it. You know, I was listening to Jesse Ventura earlier today on a previously broadcasted show, and I've got to tell you, you know, he was asked a point-blank question. He says, what would you do about Syria? And he said, absolutely not a damn thing. It's not my business.
Nope.
It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with the U.S. I wouldn't do a damn thing. Let them kill each other. Who cares? And I agree with that. Shouldn't surprise
anybody. I mean, Jesse says a lot of smart things. It makes a lot of sense. And he was one of the few people who actually got elected to governor of a state fighting against the Uniparty. I mean, hell, he had both sides against him, and he still managed to win a three-way race. And again, it kind of leads me into comments that we heard, things that just came out. I don't know if you were following it just last night. Did you see the comments by Matt Drudge?
Nope. Go ahead.
I can pull it back up here. I was trying to pull this computer screen up. But Matt Drudge, basically, it was interesting. He put this on his own little social network, on his own version, I guess, on his own Facebook page, as opposed to putting it out on the Drudge Report. But basically, he was saying, why do people continue to vote for Republicans? He's basically saying the stuff that you and I have been talking about, how they're basically the same thing. Hopefully, I can pull up that quote here in a moment.
Well, I mean, you know, people continue voting for the two-party system. They have been conditioned to believe that's their only options. You know, and I'll be honest with you, to some degree, you know, we've talked about third parties before, you know. In the last presidential election, for example, you know, for me, the choice was Mitt Romney or Barack Obama. You know, I wasn't worried about the third party because I felt it was going to be that close, and I was so adamant about getting Obama out, I actually voted for Romney. Now, I'm not saying I'm proud of it. You know, it's one of the times where you vote the lesser of two evils, you know.
Well, the thing about the lower races, I mean, you're going to have more of an impact. This goes back to what we've been saying on this show and other shows, and many people have written off Washington, D.C., and again, telling people they need to be an impact like you are here in a local area and like we are in a state with groups like Paid by Kentucky. But, you know, I didn't throw away my vote because I didn't vote for either of the two major parties. I learned my lesson on that about 13 years ago. But, you know, if you get these third parties running, this is why it's important. What Ken Mollman's done, what our friend Michael Lewis has done, and they're all basically trying to get something done that the two major parties don't want them to do. And this is why all the legislation is written like it is, because you have just the two sides of the Uniparty writing the legislation. And I found the quote here that Matt Drudge put this down of all places. I thought it was interesting. He put this on his own Facebook page of Matt Drudge. You know, he gets millions and millions of views to the Drudge Report, but he put this on a Facebook page, so whatever.
Right.
And here's what Matt Drudge said last night. He said, it's now authoritarians versus libertarian. Since Democrats versus Republicans has been obliterated and there's no real difference between the parties, why would anyone vote Republican? Please give me a reason. Raise taxes, marching us off to war again, more NSA snooping. Who are they? That's what Matt Drudge said.
You know, who are is the right question, because it's getting to the point. You know, we often talk about the two-party system as being the uniparty. They could care less about the people they represent. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. It's all about keeping control of yourself and your party so that you can maintain your job. You know, and it's fascinating, too, because, you know, when I was listening to some of this stuff earlier with Jesse Ventura, you know, one of the things he was talking about is, because one of the questions he was asked is, how do you change things in America? Because we have become such a corporatist political system. I mean, as he says, there's two gangs running the country. Calls them Democrats and Republicans. That's the name of his last book. So, yeah, when we look at all of this stuff in play, I kind of have to agree with him. And part of the problem is, and this is something that I've said for a long time, and I know you disagree with, but I think we need to get rid of the Electoral College. You know, we need to go ahead and get rid of the Assange Supreme Court decision that allows corporations to be, you know, considered a person when they're not. And we need to get rid of the Electoral College. The presidency is the only election in this country that is elected by the Electoral College and not the people. I think there's a lot of sense in that. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the only election elected. It's the only race elected that way, but it's also the only race that the entire country votes in. I mean, we have federal races where basically they affect – you know, people don't think about the fact that someone who's a U.S. senator from California or a U.S. rep from New York, they definitely heavily affect what happens to us because they're making federal legislation. And the problem with that, and the reason I don't want to ever get rid of the Electoral College, is that people think it's bad now. People bitch and moan that all the politicians go to Iowa and New Hampshire and they don't come to Kentucky. Well, that's Kentucky's own damn fault for not changing when they have their primaries. But the fact is, if we get rid of the Electoral College, they're only going to go to California, New York, Florida, maybe Texas or Ohio, and that's the only places you'll ever see them.
But that's what we've got now. That's exactly it. They're going to the places that have the most delegates. They're ignoring the rest of the country. And I think that Ventura made a great point, you know, because he said the Electoral College at one time was necessary. When you look back at when the Electoral College first came about, everybody using the Electoral College, we, you know, they actually literally had to send people on horseback to Washington or wherever the hell they were going at. You know, they had to send people on horseback to deliver the results, and then that's why you had the Electoral College. Today, with the technology we've got, the instant communication, everything else, you know, there's really no need for that because we can tabulate votes right away. I still don't buy the Electoral College argument, and I think that Jesse Ventura basically, you know, reinforced that in me, you know, especially when he's that historical perspective about how they used to deliver the vote by horseback. We don't have that problem anymore. You know, and so for me, that just doesn't make much sense. And I, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But I don't see the Electoral College being that great of a deal anymore. And I think we do need to get back to the popular vote. And if we can get back to a popular vote, would that help us get third-party candidates? Because let's face it, even if a third-party candidate wins a couple of states or whatever, the Electoral College is under no obligation to give them that vote. So does that help us or hurt us?
I think the focus is on the wrong thing. If the goal by getting rid of the Electoral College is going to be to help independents or third parties or people who aren't part of the uniparty, then that goal is misguided. Because if we want to get those positions elected, we got to start electing them just like Kim Mullen would tell you from the ground up. You got to start at city council and then work your way up to state. And it doesn't mean you don't run a candidate for the White House, but the problem is, people don't take the Libertarian Party or the other parties, the other minor parties are the major quote-unquote third party. They don't take them seriously because they only hear about them every 4 years. And that's the problem that people like Kim Mullen are trying to solve, is getting people involved year-round and realizing, hey, when there's elections, you need to get a candidate from your party so they'll see you in all the elections. I understand if people don't know anything about the Libertarian Party and all they're receiving is the crap that's force-fed them through the mainstream globalist press, then they're not going to look at that other candidate on the ballot who doesn't have the R or the D in front of his name. But if they see the Libertarians or the Natural Law Party or the Green Party or the Constitution Party or whomever in elections for state rep, elections for governor, and elections for Senate, then they're going to start paying more attention to them.
But you know, I have a situation though that, you know, when you say we got to put up somebody in these parties so you get used to seeing that party and they don't have an R and a D. When I look at the Libertarians, I'll be honest with you, many years ago, my first thought of the Libertarian Party was what a joke. And I tell you why, because right here locally, the Libertarian Party candidate that always seemed to be put up was Donna Mancini. Mm-hmm. And Donna Mancini, I got news for you, man. She did more to set back the Libertarian Party here in Louisville, Kentucky, than anybody I've seen before or since. And, you know, Donna Mancini just came off as a nut job. So it affected the recruiting and the other things for the third party, the Libertarian Party. So, you know, I personally think that all local elections should be nonpartisan, that we should not have, you know, partisan elections in the first place.
That'd
if these guys want to have the primaries, yeah, I mean, if these guys want to have the primaries, let them pay for them. They're not going to, you know, but you're not going to get a politician to do that. So the real thing for me now, I guess, is how do we get third parties elected, you know, when we can't keep them, you know, financially solvent, or we have to reduce ourselves to people like Donna Mancini? How do you make them relevant?
It's got to be a snowball that builds. It's got to be a snowball that you build uphill. And if you're ever trying to build a big snowball and push it up the hill, it's not going to be easy as much as it is the people at the top of the hill throwing the snowballs down at you. And you got to build it up by getting the word out in the press. And again, there are people out there now, you know, depending on what people think, people have different opinions on professional pollsters, people who get paid to go get signatures and that kind of thing. But neither here nor there, if you're getting signatures and you're getting candidates on the ballot, that's what's important. You got to get the word out about these minor parties. And my question, and I won't disagree or agree with you about Donna Mancini, but my question is, you looked at her and heard what she was saying, and you thought, I think you said you thought she was a nut, right?
Yeah, I did, but it wasn't because of the constitutional stuff she was saying.
I know.
Donna Mancini.
What's the only difference between her and the nuts that run the Democratic Party in Louisville and the Republican Party in Louisville? The only difference
is
they're seen as credible because they're tied to the National Party who run everything.
Yeah, well, for me personally, that's never been the case. I've always voted on a person-by-person basis. I don't vote party politics, never have. You know, so for me personally, that really wasn't an issue. I can see what you mean to the average person. But for me personally, it wasn't. But Donna Mancini, to me, did so much harm. I mean, she couldn't put together a coherent sentence, mostly because she was screwed up all the time. You know, she couldn't put together a coherent sentence. She could not make a good argument for anything she was doing. You know, and it's almost like, I don't know. Gatewood, for example. Gatewood was probably one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. If you had a conversation with Gatewood Galbraith, and I know you have, if you had a conversation with Gatewood Galbraith one-on-one, you know, he would come off as a guy that had the ideal positions to fix everything that's wrong here in Kentucky,
right?
Anyway. You know,
well,
and he was right.
The thing that Gatewood would always say to him, and I still remember many times Gatewood saying this, was people would say that he was a perennial candidate, and he'd say, well, you know what, the state's got perennial problems.
He's right. He was absolutely right. And the thing about it was, Gatewood back at the time when it wasn't prudent to do so, you know, he used to also say on his last campaign before he died, God rest his soul, but, you know, before he died, he said, you know, they always told me I was 30 years ahead of my time. Here we are 30 years later. And that was in regards to marijuana. But even Gatewood in the last campaign wasn't focusing on legalizing marijuana across the board like he did early in his campaigns or early in his political life, which is what ultimately hurt him. You know, people would not get past that to listen to anything else he was talking about. And that was the problem.
They wouldn't. Just look at that gubernatorial election. Now that we're looking back, we're midway in between gubernatorial elections. We're midway between the last one and the next one. And just look back 2 years ago, now look at what the choices were. And again, if you count Gatewood as the third choice, because you have to, because look at your other two choices. You had the choices of Papaw Bashir and Mayor for Life Jerry Abramson. On the other side, you had David Blackjack Williams and Richie Get My Gun and Shoot Your Animal from the Back of My State Paid Vehicle Farmer. And these are the two ballot candidates you had, and you wonder why people wanted another choice. I mean, again, you need to remind folks, anytime you run into the party establishment, I'm only talking about the Republican Party establishment because that's the one with which I'm most familiar, remind them of who their Mount Rushmore of leaders were in the state of Kentucky with their party. And you go back over the last 10 years, it was David Williams, Trey Grayson, and Richie Farmer. One who was running on a rail, he got out when he could. He took a judgeship race because he knew he was about to get his ass kicked in the governor's race. The second who cheated, lied, and stolen from the time that he got recruited at UK, which is known for that, until he avoided prison time. And the third, Trey Grayson, who left the Republican Party, hightailed his ass to Harvard, and now lobbies for Democrat candidates. These are the three faces of their party, and they wonder why people are sick of their shit.
I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that at all. And what I try to do, because you're absolutely
people,
right.
Went to the party establishment in Louisville, say to them, David Williams, Richie Farmer, Trey Grayson, now tell us why we shouldn't vote third party again.
I'm not saying we shouldn't vote third party. Actually, I'm craving.
Say that,
oh, I know.
Say that to your leadership, because the problem
I am
is
craving.
I don't disagree with you. If you saw Donna Mancini and you thought she was a little off her rocker, but like I said, the only difference between she and the people who were running the Republican Party and Democratic Party in Louisville is because they have the perceived power, so they're treated
right.
Better because they're perceived as powerful.
I can go with that. I can go with that because, you know, that is the thing. But the problem is we really haven't had any truly viable third-party candidates. I mean, even party candidates, if you want to look at it, let's look at Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin. You know, somewhere else, and I was planning on going, but that's okay. But Matt Bevin just went out touting this great endorsement he got, you know, from somebody that, you know, is so laughable, it's unbelievable. You know, he's out there touting, huh?
You talking about the Louisville Tea Party?
No. Matt Bevin's out there touting his endorsement by Wendy Caswell.
Right, she's chairman of the Louisville Tea Party.
Well, yeah, but okay. I see. I don't consider Wendy Caswell worthy of even discussion, and I hate to even give her anything else. But you know, he's touting this endorsement by her like this is some kind of big deal, you know. And he's wanting to be a Republican candidate taking on Mitch McConnell, and that's the best thing he has to fall back on, you know. So even the establishment doesn't have any clear candidates when it comes to incumbents anymore. That's the travesty of the whole thing because, you know, you've got your Mitt Romney's, who was ordained to run against Obama. There was no doubt that was going to happen in 2012. You've got your Mitch McConnell, who's fighting against Matt Bevin. You know, even on a local level, you get all these no-names stepping up to the plate that are just trashed and chastised. You know, so where is the room for the third-party candidate who can make a difference? And that's what I guess I'm trying to get at. We have to have some credibility with these third-party candidates. You take a Michael Lewis or a Ken Mullen, those two guys have credibility, in my opinion. I know both on a personal basis. You know, and you look at those two guys, they've got credibility. But unfortunately, because of what's happened in the past with third-party candidates like Donna Mancini, you know, that credibility doesn't lead to the money that they need to compete. This is what I'm talking about, and that's why I think that we need to get rid of, on a national level, we have to get rid of Citizens United. The Supreme Court has already ruled. You can't overrule a Supreme Court decision. So the only way to change that decision is to make an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. How many people are out there calling for that? Not many.
Well, nobody is, and like I said, when it comes to things like the Electoral College, that's the reason I put it way down the list. I mean, if we can either get actual media coverage, forget about a vote. If you could actually get mainstream media to start talking about things like the election runoff stuff that Ken Mullen would be far better explaining to you and to your audience than I would, the way you can have the different kind of way of electing people with the first and second runoffs. If we get the media to talk about NOTA, none of the above on the ballots, if we get the media to talk about why is there a straight party on the ballots, why is there a tax write-off for the two major parties, hell, that would be a victory if we could just get that out in the national dialogue. That's why I said I would put the concern about the Electoral College way down the list. Because you know what? If you get all those people elected that you should get elected at the state level, then the states can work with the 10th Amendment to nullify anything federal that they don't like, and they can put the feds in their place. And then and once you get up to the federal level, if you want to go to that level, if you're electing the right people to Congress, then they can put any other decisions by the courts in place. They can impeach judges. People don't know that. You can impeach judges in this country, and it's just a matter of getting people elected from the ground up so you have some accountability.
Well, and I totally agree with you there. I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes down to our state legislature making changes. I mean, all politics are local. I don't care what level you think you're running. Everything starts at a local level, and I totally agree with that, especially when you get into 10th Amendment issues and everything else. But, you know, for me personally, you know, when you get into the runoff elections and stuff like that, you look at your judges' races, those are a very similar thing to that, because ultimately what happens in these nonpartisan races is everybody runs, and the top two face off in the general election. That's how Katie
Well, just talk about Kentucky for a minute. Again, if you look at the Kentucky ballot, it is correct that you have to get the current elected legislators to actually get legislation through that's going to change stuff that they're already doing. So it seems like it's a dog chasing its tail kind of philosophy. But if you look at Kentucky and compare it to some other states, Kentuckians can only vote on statutes and amendments from the legislature. They can't recall officials. They can't veto legislation by referendum, and they can't vote on statutes or amendments from citizens. So they can only vote.
Our policies
on statutes and amendments from the legislation unless the legislature itself changes those rules.
Well, and I agree. Our policies in Kentucky, the way that we govern things here, is totally ridiculous. Our model of politics has been out there for 100 years. You know, that's just the way it is. We should be able to have recall elections and everything else. To be quite honest with you, recall elections have been done in Wisconsin, as we know. You know, they've been done in California. California is probably not a great example because these guys don't keep anybody in office more than a year or two, it seems like, anymore. You know, but you're right. Recall elections would do a great service for
us.
Think
about politicians
running
for office.
They're not going to get it because of the entrenched. Go ahead.
Right. No, I just said, think about politicians running for office next year, and this is something to think about. If a politician, I don't even know how to word this, if a politician made the following part of his platform, people would look at them like they had eight heads coming out of their neck. Could you imagine if a politician or someone wanting to be a politician, wanting to serve as a citizen legislator, could you imagine if someone came up and they ran for office, whether they're known or unknown, have money or don't have money, beside the point, but could you imagine if part of their platform, they say, yeah, I want to change the law to give you the people the right to vote on things without me voting on it. Could you imagine how people would look at them like it's bizarre? How many people are going to run for office and then admit or be willing to admit that they want to change the law to give you more power over them? They wouldn't have run for office in the first place.
Oh, I think you're right. People would think you're totally nuts if you meant something like that. That's ideally what they're supposed to be doing anyway, is the will of the people. So you got to ask about that. You know, it's interesting, too, because when you bring that up, you know, I mean, let's look at some great examples real quick. I'm running short on time. But real quick, there's one great recent example right here in Louisville of why we need, you know, citizens that are more involved in these oversight committees and everything else. Look at Barbara Shanklin and a Metro Ethics trial. You know, that you're letting the council decide things based on politics and everything else. They all have a dog in the fight. How many bodies does Barbara Shanklin know were buried to get that one vote to let her keep her job? You know, you had the Metro Council acting as a jury. Why is that ever acceptable? We should have a citizens ethics committee that should be able to bring these charges. You know what I mean?
No,
we didn't have that, and nobody wants to go there.
No, and not only that, but remember, if you want to change some of these rules that bind your Metro Councilmen, you had to go through the state legislature to change the rules that bind the Metro Councilmen.
Right. Right.
And again, you know how they feel in the legislature about Louisville. They just like to rape us and take our money and go buy stadiums for Lexington. So they, you know, they don't care too much of what we think in Louisville. If we have some issue with our Metro Council, on one hand, they'll say, oh, let them work it out. But on the surface, we can't let us work it out because it's up to them to change the laws to make any difference.
Well, you're right. And, you know, I mean, things that they do make a big difference. In our everyday lives. For those people who don't want to get involved in politics, I just laugh at them because they don't understand. There's not one thing they do in their life that the government is not involved in. Not one thing happens in your life the government's not involved in. It's crazy. I want to give you some examples here because I found these were very, very interesting. For one thing, today, former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, you know, decided he was going to start referring to President Barack Obama as a so-called commander-in-chief. I find that the pot calling the kettle black, you know, because he says that, you know, that the fact that American people are confused, the fact that Congress seems uncertain, and the international community is not supportive in Syria, a reflection of the fact that the so-called commander-in-chief has not been acting as commander-in-chief, he not provided leadership.
This?
Donald Rumsfeld. I actually agree with what's said.
The same Donald Rumsfeld who stood there. You know, we're coming up on the 12th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, Ed, and that's the same Donald Rumsfeld who had a very low-key press conference September 10th, 2011. Ironic. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. I'm sure there's no connection at all, so pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right? The same Donald Rumsfeld, the same crony globalist hack, who on September 10th, 2011, held a little conference and said, oh, by the way, there's $2.3 trillion that's missing.
Yeah, they said they could not count for 25%.
And we never heard about it again after the September 11th attack.
Sure.
Then we had to be America, and then we had to bring in Homeland Security. What did they always tell us, Ed? They told us, oh, we got to have this or this and this and that. We got to pass this law and that law, or the terrorists win. Mm-hmm. You look at what goes on the airports, what goes on the highways, looks like the terrorists did win.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Another thing I want to point out, Dale, we're probably going to hit overtime for a minute or two, so hang with me. Another thing I want to point out, according to Hired.com, you can look at this story. It came out yesterday. You know, we talk a lot about NSA spying and everything else. You know, well, ask yourself this. Where were you at in 1987? All right? If you remember, 1987, we were getting to the presidential race. Gary Hart actually had to drop out of the presidential race, the 1988 presidential race, because of Donna Rice and everything else. We all know about that. Oliver North.
Monkey business.
Right. Oliver North admitted that we had shredded documents in the Iran-Contra scandal. All right? One other thing that was admitted, nobody paid attention to, and I got to give props to HotAir.com for pulling this out. But according to recent information, if you had a call that went through AT&T switchboards, guess what? The DEA were already searching through your call records back in the 80s through the AT&T switchboards. So for at least 6 years, the DEA, who was working on counter-narcotics programs, had routine access to the AT&T database that contained the phone records of Americans' phone calls. Now we've got the NSA. That was a precursor to what's going on. That thing was called the Hemisphere Project. You guys look it up online. The Hemisphere Project, it was a partnership between the federal and local officials and AT&T. Nobody knew about it. Hot Air just reported it to us. So there's your precursor to the NSA. You know, you think the NSA isn't a problem? Ask Mexico and Brazil. According to other reports we've gotten, the National Security Agency spy program, this is from the Huffington Post, folks. This is your liberal media. The NSA spy program targeted the communications of the Brazilian and Mexican presidents in 2012. They wanted to check the content of their emails and everything else. You know, this is according to a U.S. journalist who got these secret documents from Edward Snowden. He talked about this on Sunday. So we've got to look at all of this stuff, you know. But here's where sometimes the people getting involved does make a difference. So here is something that has just happened that would not have happened, I don't think, under any other circumstance. The millions of people saying, screw you, we're going to do it anyway. But according to the Huffington Post, as we now know, as reported last week, Attorney General Eric Holder announced that the federal government would not intervene in any state implementation plans for legalized marijuana for adults. I think that's pretty fascinating, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, we talked about that a little bit last week on my show, and again, it's great if they stick by it. It's great if they don't change their mind. There are some areas like in Oregon and Colorado where they're already getting smart to it and they're being a little bit less police state, if you will, in the way that they go after those things.
I think it's fantastic because now we can make our own choices. We're going to go ahead and take this real quick phone call because we're about out of time, but they called in late and I want to give them a chance. This is Beesbowl Senior. Can I help you?
Yeah, I just want to say one thing.
Okay.
Not you.
You know, there's always some idiot that's got to be out there playing a silly-ass game. I apologize to our listeners. Normally, I take that in the queue, and I go ahead and check it out, but we didn't really have much time tonight. So, you know, to that guy, you know, hey, fuck you. Who cares? So, anyway, here we go. So, according to one of the studies we always talk about, a marijuana smoker would have to consume 20,000 to 40,000 times the amount of THC in a joint in order to have any risk of dying whatsoever. So, you know, apparently, you know, Eric Holder has cited that he's going to go ahead and say, okay, well, we're shooting here, and he's going to back off and let the states do what they will. Now, for us in Kentucky, that should actually be a very good thing, should it not? Because now we can go after legalizing hemp industrial hemp and the other things that Jamie Comer has been going after, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So they have no
more. I agree. I mean, again, if they get away from this stuff, it's very unfortunate to hear about a Hemisphere project coming up, and everybody thought we were just paranoid and we told them that this was happening. But, yeah, the stuff we're talking about now, I can remember talking about industrial hemp in Young Republican meetings 15 years ago, Ed. I can remember us having discussions where a few of us, a few enlightened ones of us, and I won't embarrass the other ones by naming them, but they were very smart mm-hmm. people at the time as well, and we were trying to tell people about industrial hemp, and they looked at us like we were insane. This was 15 years ago.
Oh, I know. I know. It's incredible, isn't it? I tell you, man, it's totally hilarious to me what goes on. But thank goodness we're finally making some strides. Where it all leads, nobody knows. Dale, we're out of time. Final thought, my friend.
Well, final thought, just to go back to the Hemisphere project. And like you said, this database contains CDRs for telephone carriers that use the AT&T switch to process telephone calls. It's an unclassified program, so it provides deconfliction within the Hemisphere database. But they got 4 million CDRs that populate this database on a daily basis. And like you just said, Ed, this has been going on since the 80s. So, again, people get really uptight when they tell us things that go against their Republican good, Democrat bad, Democrat good, probably a bad thing. But the bottom line is you got to stand up for things like this. You got to stand up against going into Syria. You got to stand up against things like Hemisphere. And to tie it back into Syria, if the Congress is to block a strike on Syria, it will almost certainly have to come from the House. And that's where your good friend, House Speaker John the Crier Boehner, and Majority Leader Eric Cantor are now at Obama's side. So you can just look. It's the globalists against us. It's not Democrats versus Republicans. And the answer to 1984 is 1776. Death to the New World Order.
Well put, my friend. Well, I tell you, folks, my biggest problem is everything. You know, I hate to make it so broad. I would love to fine-tune it and point out one little thing that's wrong with our government and what's going on these days, but I can't. I can't. The two-party system in America has proven once too many times, in my opinion, to be as corrupt as it can possibly be. No longer do the people of this country matter. Only the corporate globalists matter. Only the people that are involved in the New World Order, as Dale likes to use, Bilderbergers, go on and on and on. We can name a whole bunch of people that mainstream has done a great job identifying as conspiracy theorists. But is it really a conspiracy when it's based in fact? When we can prove that the 19 hijackers involved in 911, for example, we were told that all of these people were dead, and we've proven later that at least six or seven of them were alive and well over in the Middle East. You know, you listen to all the lies coming from this administration, coming from the prior administrations. I'd let George Bush and everybody else off the hook. The fact of the matter is our government lies to get in the middle of wars, but they don't pay the price for it. Elected leaders aren't sending their sons and daughters overseas to fight wars that have nothing to do with defending our country. They're sending your sons and daughters. You know, last night I went on a little rant at the end of the show, and I caught a little bit of backlash for it because I started challenging those people who say they support the troops. And I called them bigots, and I called them hypocrites. And in many cases, I firmly believe that. I'm not going to back off of that statement. If you say you support the troops, then prove it. You don't support the troops by giving a lip service. You don't support the troops by sending a toothbrush and some toothpaste and a box of cookies over to daggone Middle East so they can brush the teeth with sand in the middle of the Iraqi desert. That's not supporting your troops. You want to support your troops, your government accountable. The people who are sending our sons and daughters, our wives and husbands, over to fight wars that have absolutely nothing to do with America. That's how you support the troops. You hold this daggone administration accountable. You hold our government officials accountable. You hold the 10 people in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today that voted to send this to the full House. I'm sorry, to the full Senate floor. You hold those people accountable. You vote them out in the next election. There is no reason whatsoever for us to be in Syria. There is no reason whatsoever for us to be in Iraq, and there's no reason whatsoever for us in Afghanistan. Because our primary duty as soldiers, as people who fight for this country and have fought for this country, you're welcome. I am a veteran, and I can proudly say that. Our primary duty is to defend the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So don't tell me you support the troops when you continue to reelect the warmongers. Don't tell me you support the troops
when you've got Barack Obama sitting in office with a Nobel Peace Prize, wanting to bomb Syria so that he can daggone make people quit thinking about Benghazi. Come on, guys. You're a lot smarter than that, America. It's time to wake up and prove it. That's it tonight, folks. Have a great night. Tomorrow night, The Truth will be here on his Thursday night TNT show live at 7. And don't forget our good friend Moment on Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And I will see you guys next Monday. Take care. Have a great week. Thanks so much for stopping by.